Welcome back to another episode of Nerd Tweet and a Movie Podcast. I am your host, Nerdpool Prime. Today is going to be very different than most episodes. I'm not going to do any news, take any breaks. I'm just going to go through and do a deep dive on episode 5 of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Truth. So that being said, obviously this entire episode is going to be 100% spoilers if you have not seen the episode already. So do yourself a favor. If you have not seen the episode, come back and watch this after. Maybe you'll get some explanation of things you might have missed or things you didn't understand or catch the references to moving forward. So no hard feelings. Just come back whenever you're ready. That being said, let's get into it. This episode picks up directly after the gruesome events of the last episode, the whole world was watching. John Walker just murdered someone in broad daylight, live streamed all over the world. So he runs and runs until he finds an abandoned warehouse. When he's alone, you can see he has remorse for his actions. I guess Lamar tried to talk him out of going in there. So he was always the voice of reason for Walker, and it appears he was that way all the way till the day he died. And of course he is mourning the death of his partner too here a bit, but he's really like letting himself feel what he did. He's taking off his mask, metaphorically speaking, and letting himself feel it. And that's why he's screaming and angry and just broken. You can see how when he leans down with the shield, how he's just like taking a solemn moment to like understand what he just did. There's an absolutely like that gorgeous shot right there of him kneeling, in it with a long foreground and the light shining on him just before Bucky and Sam walk in. This whole episode, I'll get more about that later, was just truly stunning from a cinematic aspect, and especially the framing of shots. But we'll get more into that in a little bit. So while the events of the last episode made it necessary, I find it a little funny just how a few episodes ago, Bucky was basically saying, let's go take the shield. And Sam literally said, we can't just jump him and take the shield. And now here we are. They're about to jump him and take the shield. Now, it makes you think, like, Sam and Bucky would have done that. Lamar would still likely be alive. Furthermore, Walker probably would never got a chance to get the Super Soldier Serum. And none of the events the last couple episodes really would have last episode really would have transpired. So a lot of pain could have been avoided if they would have just taken the shield. But at the time, you had to agree with Sam. He made some valid points, and they obviously didn't go get it. But and then you get that common phrase that keeps getting said: "Time to go to work." I love how Walker initially tried to just like walk it off, like, "Oh, nothing's wrong. It's fine." And it makes sense, like, especially after what happens later, he may truly believe it, like, to some extent that was necessary. He said he did what he had to do, trying to justify flat-out murder. When he said he killed Lamar, Walker had almost, like, come on, you guys, like, wink, wink, like, look about it, like, you saw. And, like, Bucky just basically said, no, that's not true. And Walker sighs, like, seriously, dude, like, why are you making this so difficult? Like, why can't you just go along with this? Because he's Captain America. He truly believes that he has the license to do whatever he wants to do. Bucky tries to warn him what a dark road he's heading down, because Bucky literally has been there. Walker responds that he's not like him, and he doesn't realize he's very much like Bucky, like a weapon created to do a specific job that is easily discarded. But more on that later. Sam does his best to try to defuse the situation. His work with veterans and dealing with trauma, like, really kicks in. And even though he can't possibly believe what he's saying, granted, they do consider his record, but they sure as hell don't let him explain. But more on that later. After Sam says, we don't want anyone else to get hurt, this is, like, a truly stunning visual of the shield that is still just blood slicked, fresh off of a murder. like I said, this episode truly had some really stunning framing with a close-up on Walker as he melts down, kneeling with the shield, as I said before. Now here with this, the shield and the blood, there are more great examples, and I'll get to all of those later. Moving on. Now, I do not think Walker would have, like, I don't think there was any possible way that Walker was going to go peacefully. But the second Sam said, "You got to give me the shield," Walker switched to fight mode. All reason thrown out the window. It reminded me of, like, when Cap told Thor to put his hammer down. Like, there was a moment before he said that when it was possible for a peaceful resolution. And it was the same here. I mean, granted, it's not the exact same because it was Thor and his hammer. But, I mean, it has a very similar feel to it. Like, once that was said, it didn't matter what was going on. Loki could have been like, I'm killing everyone. This is all part of my plan. Wahahaha. And he still would have hit him with that. He still would have dropped the hammer. Like, there was no way. Once that was said, there was no turning back. Walker says, "You don't want to do this." And Bucky goes, "Yeah, we do. Dude, they've been talking about jumping your ass for days." And then you got another great framing shot that almost mirrors that same fight in Avengers with Thor versus Cap versus Iron Man when they're just standing there in the forest. This fight scene was just absolutely brilliant. The show continues to have truly phenomenal fight choreography, and it's absolutely no different here. Sam and Bucky are fighting for the shield where Walker is fighting them. He's aiming to hurt them while they're protecting themselves and launching attacks either to stop the other from getting hit with the shield or to disarm Walker from the shield. Random side note, how does Sam control the Falcon suit? I mean, I initially thought it was part of the goggles, like Iron Man's, you know, HUD display. But he's not wearing it now, so, like, I wonder how he's doing that. I'm going to do some digging and see if I can get to the bottom of that. But more on that in a future date. Now, initially, when Bucky went for Walker's gun, I thought he was trying to use it. But it is clear that he was just trying to make sure that Walker couldn't use it. It was on the ground right next to him, and he didn't even reach for it, and he just went to start fight, like, to punch and kick again. And then he had, right before Walker tried to, like, decapitate Bucky, he had Sam coming in with a kick save and a butte. With that, like, bicycle kick, and literally that was the trend of that entire fight, was that it was Bucky and Sam trying to just basically fight for their lives until they can get that shield. Sam almost did get the shield loose with that spinning wing attack thing that he did, but much like the gauntlet in Infinity War, it just didn't come off all the way. This fight also had reminiscence of the Avenger fight in Endgame and the scramble for the gauntlet. So then when Bucky and Walker are going at it, he grabs the top of the shield and pulls it down like Black Panther did in Captain America Civil War. Wakanda Forever, RIP Chadwick. When Walker launches that shield at Bucky, did you notice he was able to secure his arm in the straps as it hit him? Like, he already had it, like, all secure when he hit the forklift. Now, that's some super soldier reaction time for you. I mean, the thing was spinning, for Christ's sake. Moving on. Walker starts to unravel here. You know, you can see him starting to ask, "Why are you making me do this?" Just like him feeling it was necessary to kill the guy in the last episode. Walker then throws Bucky across the warehouse into, like, this like electrical box, which, like, kind of short circuits his arm, and by extension him, kind of like what Black Widow did to him a little bit in the Winter Soldier movie. Again, when Sam comes back, he goes straight for the shield. Walker flips him over. Literally, if Sam didn't roll out the way, Walker was straight up killing him right there. Sam uses the his wings to sweep the leg, and then he retreats. And then Sam, you know, with that retreat, he has the opportunity and tries to talk to him and reason with him again. He's like, "John, this isn't you." And then Walker just responds, "We could have been a team." And that's not even close to being true, my friend. Sam tries to rip the shield using, like, this grappling hook thing, which is pretty impressive because it, you gotta think, to be able to latch onto that shield, it had to be some type of, like, suction or hook or magnet that was able to latch onto this like perfectly slick shield, which is pretty impressive. And ended up, you know, after a tug of war, they both fall along with the shield. Then they, you know, they had that little fight for the gauntlet. I mean shield. And that continues, and Sam tries to escape Walker's grip with his wings, and Walker just wasn't having it. He, you know, grabbed them, flipped them, pinned them over, did like this like suplex move. Takes off his helmet and just screams, "I am Captain America," with this most sadistic look in his eye, and just rips Sam's wings right off the suit. Luckily, before Walker could have a repeat performance of his last episode, Bucky comes in to stop him. Walker and Bucky go blow for blow until Sam comes in out of nowhere through this like flying Falcon punch, and grabs a shield and just starts pulling with the assistance of his jetpack thrusters. Another great framing close up with Bucky and Walker inches away from each other's face as he holds him down so Sam could get it off. I wonder when that was shot, because I have a feeling that was shot real early, because I have a hard time believing they would have been able to get away with that with the COVID protocols, unless they green screened and just put them next to each other in editing process. But I digress. So as they're holding down, Spider-Man tries to pull off the gauntlet. Sam tries to pull off the shield. As the three struggle, Walker's bones gave way before his willpower did, and they break his arm, and of course the shield then falls loose. Even with the broken arm, he still tries to fight them both, but Bucky gets a few punches in before he picks him up to do this like suplex slam, and at the exact moment Sam flies up and slams him too, and they all collide and end up sprawled out on the floor. This is the start of Bucky and Sam really subconsciously working together, and they're not really accustomed to working together as a team, because they really just like work side by side. I mean, they keep saying we're not partners. But this episode was a truly building episode on their bond. I'm sure a lot of people will look at this episode as like a filler episode when it's actually a story building episode. This is necessary for the characters to not be static. And what I mean by that is that in terms of static is a character that is one note and doesn't change. Dynamic is when they change over time based on the story. All the characters in this show have been incredibly dynamic. Because even look at Walker at first, when he first started, he was just trying to like impress everyone, not let them down. And then now look where we are. Or he had, when we first saw Zemo, he was still this ruthless bad guy. And then as the series progressed, we began to understand him more and like him more. That's a dynamic character. And this show has had the opportunity to do that with multiple characters, and it's been truly awesome. Bucky is the first to get to his feet. He picks up the shield and walks over and just drops it next to Sam. Bucky then silently just walks away. When Sam looks at the shield with all that blood on it, he looks so, like, distraught. He tried to wipe off the blood with his hands, like, you know, like, in the old cinema movies where, like, someone break, like, a little kid breaks something, and, like, he's, like, you're combing the hair of a doll that's broken, like, oh, it's all okay. And that's how it felt with him trying to wipe off that blood with his hand, which obviously wasn't going to work. And then, you know, fade to black, title card shows. And this all happens before the title card of the show even shows. So this episode is roughly 10 minutes longer than all the other episodes. And right when the title card unveils itself, it's at 9:13. So with a few minutes of the recap from last episode, this is pretty much the extra 10 minutes that we're getting, plus about a minute or so with the post-credit scene, and then just a little bit here and there elsewhere. So it did feel like a lot more than we usually get, and it really wasn't, because it really was the end of the last episode finished before the starting of this episode begins. You know, that also points to one thing I said in previous episodes and on my Instagram, that I think it'd be cool if they would just put it together. Give us the option to watch it as a movie. Like, that would be so cool to be able to watch this And like literally, so right after he does that with the shield, there's no credits, no nothing. It just cuts to him running. I mean, I think that'd be really cool and a nice way to watch these moving forward if they decide to go that route, which they probably won't. But I digress. So the GRC is now acting like a Gestapo and just clearing out these camps, looking for Carly and the Flag Smashers. And I just don't understand how they don't see the optics of all these moves. And you can tell later in the episode that I'm not really going to get to into because it's kind of boring. The one boring part of the episode, really, was when they were talking about what they're going to do with the quote-unquote refugees and the Patch Act. I mean, again, we got all these Easter eggs for Wolverine and the mutants. And side note, there is a rumor that's from a source that's saying it's confirmed that Marvel and Disney are working on a Wolverine anthology series that would be like every season would cover a different part of Wolverine's life. And I think that is going to be something really cool. Again, hashtag make Wolverine short again, please, Marvel, Disney. I know you own everything and know you listen to everything. So I said your name enough times. Maybe you'll hear this because we need a short Wolverine, but I digress. And Torres comes in and he starts making jokes to Bucky about how he got his sleeve back. Because, you know, the last time he saw him, he literally jumped out of a plane after ripped off his sleeve for no apparent reason. And you know, Torres is just so awesome. But Bucky, you know, walks away and Sam hits him with the, you have to take care of Zemo. And I bet thought, as probably most of us thought, that Bucky would go off to kill Zemo. I think that's a fair assessment, but more on that later. Sam and Torres talk about the next steps, and he talks about how Captain America killing a foreign national is a real big deal, and all the higher-ups are taking over and claiming jurisdiction, basically telling Sam they have to just, you know, sit this out for a while and back off. Torres looks at the bag to see some broken wings and take these broken wings, sorry, and talks about how Carly is a ghost. And she's just really good at all of this disappearing and running this, like, rebel organization or revolutionary organization. Torres says, you know, they just sit back and chill. Sometimes there's nothing to do until there's something to do. And then Sam's, that's bizarrely wise. That's a real great line. Both of those. This show is just great with the one-liners. And, like, it's this buddy cop, like, action thrill series. It's I mean, you didn't have to know, like, this show can sit aside on its own for people who aren't even Marvel fans. I mean, it might be a little weird with guy flying around and, like, you know, super soldiers, but it's not one of those shows like WandaVision where, well, I mean, WandaVision also had that appeal to a lot of people as well, but I mean, it's easier now, but the Marvel universe is getting so much more in depth and proactive, and I'm really loving the direction it's going in. So side note, when Sam says to Torres he can keep the wings, that's an Easter egg for Torres becoming the next Falcon. In the comics, he's Falcon number 2. And he becomes Falcon when Sam becomes Captain America. Now, to my understandings in the comics, he's actually like a half Falcon, half man when he takes up the mantle. And he also joins the Guardians, which is a team of young heroes like Miles Morales and Miss Marvel, to my understanding. Next, we cut to the military fallout from Walker's actions. He's stripped of all titles of Captain America and is no longer permitted to represent the United States government or its military. Walker tries to explain what happened and the council wouldn't let him. He tries to calmly explain what happened to the council, basically said, too bad, so sad, we don't care, and their minds are made up. Obviously, Walker wasn't going to stand there, and at that moment, he snaps. He screams at the court how they made him and that he always just follows the mandates. And again, here's another fantastic performance by Wyatt Russell. That monologue was just heartfelt. Not even a few minutes ago when you're watching the episode, you were happy to watch his arm get broken, get his ass kicked by Sam and Bucky. And here he is now making a compelling argument, and it makes you feel for him. I keep saying it, by the end of the next episode, everyone's going to feel sorry for him. And I have a theory. about that, which we will talk about in a little bit. Now to the punishment. On another, he was given an other than honorable discharge retroactive, to the beginning of the month. He will hold no rank in retirement and receive no benefits. Walker says, "You built me, and I am Captain America. Not anymore." And then he continues to berate him, basically saying, if you continue, you're going to go into jail. You're lucky you're not in jail after what you did. And then Walker starts to walk out, and the senator tells him to bring back the shield. So that means that Torres didn't report that Sam had the shield. So that means Torres is more loyal to Sam than he is to the government, at least at this point. Walker and his wife sit outside the, you know, the courtroom, talking about how they're going to get through this. And in walks in. And here is another great framing moment. The mysterious figure walks in all out of focus, the heels echoing through the chamber like a symphony until the pan up reveals Julia Louise Dreyfus, the extremely talented actress, comedian, producer, known for her roles in Seinfeld, SNL, and Veep. So this is the super secret cameo. From what I can gather, she's also set to appear in Black Widow. In the original release timeline, Black Widow would have come out before Falcon the Winter Soldier, so this would have had a lot more context if it was released in the appropriate order. She is playing Contessa Valentina Allegra de la Fontaine. She has gone by many aliases in the comics, such as Agent 14 and Madame Hydra. Now, Agent 14 is obviously the next number of Agent 13. So that's what my opinion is on who Sharon is working with. It's this person. And I think she's pretending to be Agent 14, a SHIELD loyalist, but actually she's secretly Madame Hydra. Now, in the comics, the Contessa first appeared in Strange Tales number 159. She was originally a loyal member of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was later revealed she secretly joined Hydra. It's also revealed that she was also a Russian sleeper agent the entire time while she was working with S.H.I.E.L.D. So here, there's another place where you can make the connection to Black Widow. Now, at this time, we don't know how her role will play out. Some think she might be the power broker. I don't think so. I think she's Hydra, and Hydra didn't die out like everyone thought, and I could see them using the vacuum left by the blip and the absence of the Avengers for the most part, and S.H.I.E.L.D. not being there to reorganize will be portraying themselves as the good guys again like they did originally in the events of Captain America Winter Soldier, or at least so we thought. With the way she spoke to Walker, I think there is going to be either like a Dark Reign or Secret Empire style adaptation on the way. If they do the Secret Empires, it would be with Walker saying Hail Hydra instead of Steve. If you didn't know, that storyline was a little, let's just say, not well received initially. Then once the events unfolded, it became a little bit more bearable to watch. And I'm not going to get into that because that's just another whole rabbit hole that we don't got time for, to be honest with you. And also, side note, according to sources, Thunderbolts are getting a series on Disney Plus. This has not yet been announced or truly confirmed. I could definitely see like a Thunderbolt versus Dark Avenger type series for that. If there's a Secret Empire storyline, then that could be the substitute for that. Would be the Dark Avengers, and the Thunderbolts will be called in to, you know, take him out, because where the Avengers are not around. Julia's a delight, and she just commands so much respect in that scene, and she did very little, but it was enough for you to go, wow, this person is something serious. You notice how she knows everything, even more than the government does? Like, I mean, she knew about the super soldier serum, knew he didn't have the shield, and among a lot of other things, actually. And like I said earlier, I bet this is who Sharon has been talking to and been helping. Now, I don't know if what she said about the government not owning the shield is actually true. It may have just been, you know, like one of those things to say to get him to do what she wants without him realizing that it was her order, basically. But I could actually see that because, you know, even though the government may have provided the materials, that's a Howard Stark creation, therefore probably have a Stark patent, I would think. And it would be a very similar situation where it's owned by Stark Industries. And then also see this right here is a great example of what I've been trying to say about cancel culture and how it can't work. It doesn't always work. Like, we have seen it time and time again with the Gina Carano situation, where she gets fired for being a horrible person and saying horrible things on Twitter or social media. And then within a week or so, she's now got her own movie with some other company because they didn't feel it was right that she got canceled for speaking her mind. Here we go again with the government, you know, giving him nothing and just throwing him away. And now, more than likely, we have this nefarious agency about to enroll his services and pretty much unleash him on the world. But that's just a theory. Moving on. When we next see Carly and the Flag Smashers, they are back at the camp that was just recently cleared out by the GRC. They find out that the people had been accused of harboring and aiding international fugitives. Carly recounts the people that they lost and asks, how many times do we have to pay with our lives to be citizens of this goddamn planet? And I think this is a real deep social commentary for the struggles of minorities, especially right now in America, where black people are being shot by white police. Asian Americans are being murdered just for being Asian because of racial stereotypes due to the former administration and things of that nature. The MCU is attacking these issues. And it's becoming more and more like the comics, like how they did with the civil rights movement with the X-Men, and how they were basically an allegory for the civil rights movement. And I really like that the MCU is doing that now. And they had this great opportunity with this show, and I'm glad they took it. They could have definitely just lofted up a softball and knocked it out the park because they and stayed away from all this stuff. But they were definitely eager to attack the racial inequality and everything that is apparent and real to anyone, as Isaiah Bradley would say, with your eyes open to see. Moving on. Now, Carly continues to escalate, but more on that literally in the next second. We cut to the monument in commemoration of the lives lost during the Sokovia battle during the events of Age of Ultron. Zemo was alone with his eyes closed, probably thinking about his wife and his father and his kid. You know, remember in last episode or the episode before, he mentioned to Bucky and Sam, like, have any of you been to the monument when they were looking for Carly? He basically told Bucky where to find him if he did happen to escape. And then enter the White Wolf. Zemo says that he decided not to kill Bucky, and, you know, answering Sam's question to Zemo when they were talking about the Super Soldier Serum, what about Bucky? Bucky's all relieved. And Zemo says the girl has been radicalized beyond salvation. He says he's warned Sam, and he's just as stubborn as Steve Rogers before him. I don't know about that, really, but this right here, he's comparing him to Steve Rogers. Zemo has already accepted Sam as the true Captain America. He continues, but you, they literally programmed you to kill James. Do what needs to be done. He points out that she has people helping her everywhere, and there's only one way to stop her at this point. And Zemo is once again out of line, but he's not wrong. That's basically his character with an oversimplification at this point right now. Bucky says he appreciates the advice, but they're going to do it their own way. Zemo says, you know, I figured that would happen. And then Bucky take the gun off safety. And these are great framing shots, like close up on the gun with the slow pan up to Bucky's cold, stern face. Cut to Zemo close up with the look of a mix of fear and understanding and almost acceptance of what is about to happen next. He's just definitely accepting his near future demise. Bucky raises the gun out of frame, and then with a pan to the left, they reveal the gun in focus. And as he thumbs back the hammer, it focuses on the gun. Like, at first it's looking at his face, and then it goes to the gun. Zemo nods and just accepts it. Did you notice that, like I said, they focused on Bucky's face when it's about him, and the gun is the bad side, his Winter Soldier training kicking in. And I really do love that transition. It was done so seamlessly that it almost became, it was almost like subconscious. Like I did that. Like I was watching Bucky and then it panned, so I'm going to look at the gun. No, that was done by them and it was beautifully done. I love the rewatchability of these shows because, you know, you can't catch everything the first time. And me, I watch it probably 10 times before I record each episode that I do the breakdowns at least. Just so I can see if I can catch everything. And I don't even catch everything. I mean, last episode, I said that I couldn't understand what Aya was saying after she detached his arm. And it was simply, "Bost, damn you, James," which is basically, "Their God, damn you." And I don't catch everything, but I do watch it a lot. And I love the rewatchability because you catch something new every time. Bucky pulls the trigger and there's just a low click. Zemo didn't flinch. He really did accept and understand that was Bucky should have killed him. Then that stunning shot we got from the trailers where Bucky's dropping the bullets in front of Zemo. I mean, it's gorgeous. And again, the framing was beautiful. Now, before I say what I'm about to say, I will say this. Yes, that was likely the signal for the Dora Milaje to come and take him, because almost instantaneously they show up to retrieve him as the bullets hit the ground. That being said, how extra is Bucky? I mean, like, did he go to the Dora Milaje? I was like, hey, listen, I really want to talk to this guy first. I'm going to do this whole, like, shoot him in the face bit, but there's not going to be any bullets in there. I'm going to have the bullets in my hand, and when I'm done with my conversation, I'm going to drop him on the ground, and that's when you can come in. Like, that is so extra. Like, because if you watch it, he kind of gives him this look like, yeah, dude, no bullets in that gun. You're welcome. Like, as he says through the whole thing, you're welcome. And then Zemo, you know, him being amazing as he is, sees Adora as they walk in and just says, ladies. Then turns to Bucky. He tells him, I took the liberty of crossing off my name in your book. I hold no grudges for what you thought you had to do. Goodbye, James. Also, he calls him James as a sign of respect because he's not a friend. He doesn't have the right to call him Bucky. Io tells Bucky they will take him to the raft where he will spend the rest of his days. Fun fact, who was last running the raft? Oh, that's right, General Ross. And who's in charge of the Thunderbolts? That's right, Ross. Who leads the Thunderbolts on a lot of occasions? Into battle? Oh, that's right, Baron Zemo. I'm telling you, even if I didn't hear the reports of Thunderbolt series and works, the writing is on the wall. Is Walk about to start the Dark Avengers and Thunderbolts? Thunderbolt Ross decides to use the tools at his disposal and forms the Thunderbolts with the people that are locked up in the raft? I don't know, but that sounds really awesome. But again, I digress. She tells him it would be prudent to make himself scarce in Wakanda for the time being, but she calls him White Wolf again. Not James. And I think that was another sign that, like, hey, yeah, I called you James and, you know, I was mad at you last time, but you did what you thought was right. And, you know, the resolution, it worked out right for everybody, as it were. And, you know, when he accepts it, she's just kind of like, look on her face, like, say something smart. And then he nods. She's like, okay, cool. And then Bucky does have to ask for one more favor, though. More on that later. So Sam goes back to see Isaiah with the shield to find out more about what happened to him. And this is another social commentary that the systemic racism that black people have had to go through in the United States. Like, this whole section is literally almost calling out the United States for being the United States at times. Isaiah tells him he could not be the next Captain America. He wasn't blonde hair, blue eyes, stars and stripes. He tells him about what happened. You know, the woman that he loved died while he was in prison. All the letters she wrote never made it to him. He talks about how he got the serum. He said that they dosed up a bunch of them with different versions of the serum, and they told them it was tetanus. Now, in the comics, as I said before on the show, Dr. Wilfred Nagel was a scientist at that facility. that did all this to Isaiah and all these men. Just like in the comics, only a handful of them survived initially, and they were, you know, sent on missions and as a covert team, until only Bradley was left alive. I do like the way they adapted the story to explain how he got in prison. It talks about how he was in jail. They experimented on him. And the reason why he got thrown in jail was because he broke out to save his men, which the government considered just evidence. Which is a callback to what Sam said when Nagel said specimen A or whatever it was. He was like, look, see how he said that? Like Isaiah wasn't a real person. And then he tells him how, you know, he escaped this whole horrid scenario. A nurse took pity on him, got something forged to, you know, declare him dead. And she was even able to give him the letters from his lost love. Sam just wants to, you know, he just wants to always make everything right. He's like, I know people. I'll tell your story. And Isaiah was like, no, just leave me dead. And there's a reason for that. And I'll get to that in a little bit. Sam says things are different now, and Isaiah calls him out and asks him, do you really think times are different? I mean, you can ask the same thing about the United States today. While things are better in many ways, still there's a lot that has just evolved or mutated into an entirely new monster that is starting to be addressed, but not enough yet. But again, I digress. Bradley grills Sam about having that white man's shield. He said they erased me to make sure that his story didn't get out, which again is just like the comics with him being retconned in Truth, Red, White, and Black number one in 2003. Side note, I really hope that they do a Bradley origin story movie or series or something, because that would be so amazing to see. But again, it might be a small part of a Young Avengers storyline when you get to see Elijah Bradley become Patriot in the Young Avengers. But again, I digress. Isaiah says, you know, they will never let a black man be Captain America. And even if they did, no self-respecting black man would ever want to be. Sam sits there in silence before just leaving, and, you know, he calls his sister saying he's coming home. Now, this is tough because he hears it, and, you know, Sam is very intelligent, and he is really good at hearing people, but not listening to people, hearing people. So he really understands where Bradley was coming from there and understands that problem. So now he's got to come to terms with the fact that he still thinks, even after what he just heard and all the things that he's always been conscious of, that he still wants to be Captain America for worthy reasons, which we'll get to in a second. Sam can be seen, you know, next we see him fixing a net with his nephews, and he finds out they can't sell the boat because it's too beat up. Sam and his sister share a moment before Sam has this great idea. She grills him about why he isn't out saving the world, you know, basically because they have no leads, you know, and the government also benched them. Sam has this idea to fix the boat, and he calls in all the people in the community. The entire community just comes out to help, not because he's an Avenger, but because he's one of them. And that's another key thing that we keep talking about with Captain America, what he is. And Carly said it, I've said it, that Captain America needs to be someone that looks like them, is like them. And by them, I mean normal people in the MCU, non-enhanced individuals. So he, as a regular human, has this chance to take up this mantle. And I feel like Sam comes to the conclusion that he just absolutely has to do it. But more on that in a little bit. And there's, you know, they all pitch in. They have this huge part on the truck, and they ask, how are we going to get it off here? And then here comes Bucky by himself, picking it up and just taking it off the truck. And he replaces that with a case from Wakanda. He said he called in another favor from them. So, and then while that's happening, a pipe fitting bursts, and Sam just, you know, runs over to try to fix it. He's having an issue. Bucky comes over to assist him, and he grabs the wrench and, you know, pulls it up and does it right. And Sam goes, why didn't you use the metal arm? And he looks at him and goes, I don't always think about it because I'm right-handed. And it's funny because when I watched it, and then I watched it again with the Dungeon Master, and he was literally like, why didn't you use the arm? And I was like, wait, that's why. Like, it's beautiful. They've learned their lesson from Infinity War and how we all are with our predictions and breaking down everything. They throw in lines here and there that kind of just end it. And this is another example of that. Like when Strange said there's only one possible future, that means anyone who questions why they didn't do that, it was because, oh, for whatever reason, it didn't work because of that one only possible future, which I'm one of those people. I get into arguments all the time about that. But again, I digress. And then you got Bucky and Sarah have this little moment, and you can almost see Sam becoming that Arthur meme with the clenched fist. And then there you get a montage of Sam and Bucky working on the boat. You got, you know, Sam struggling to get something off with a crowbar. Bucky just comes and rips it off. They start talking about Carly's next move. And Sam says she's about to double down. And once again, Sam is right. They keep showing that damn case. What's in the box? What's in the box? Seven? Anybody? No? Okay. Bucky tries to skip town, and Sam pulls out that old Southern hospitality and tells him to stay with them instead of going to a hotel before he catches his fight tomorrow. And then, you know, when Bucky wakes up, he sees the kids smiling. Back up a little bit. Bucky actually starting to smile more, and he sees that there are nice people out there, and that he can maybe be happy one day. Sam does say you can stay with him, but you can't flirt with his sister. Or I will have Carlos cut you up and feed you to the fish. You know, Sam, that's real cute. He's the Winter Soldier. Ain't no one cutting him up, just for the record. Next, we see Walker meeting with Lamar's parents. They tell him how proud Lamar was of him when he was made Captain America. And Walker straight up continues this lie right to their face that the guy he killed was, in fact, the one that killed Lamar. Because, I mean, he was there. Like, the guy that he killed was one that was holding him. How did he also punch Lamar across the room? Not sure that's even possible. They say that he's resting easier knowing that the person that did it got the justice they deserved. But they didn't. With that, and what Val told him and the damn Captain America poster, I think the foreshadowing was quite clear as what we're going to get moving forward. Then we cut to Sharon talking to someone. Obviously, you can hear that it's Batroc, the Leaper that we saw earlier in the season and also in Captain America Winter Soldier. And she's hiring him for a job. Now, Sam wakes up. Bucky wakes up to the kids playing with the shield. And he just says, hey, like he raises his hand, like not even like, hey, stop playing with that. But they just, oh, God. And, you know, put the shield back and they run away. And Bucky has this nice little smile on his face. And, you know, Sebastian Stan recently said that Bucky deserves to die in his bed at 200 with his family because he, you know, he deserves that after all he's been through. And seeing those innocent kids just playing innocently with that shield put a smile on his face. So, you know, I guess that is something he hopes he can get one day. Sam and Bucky are working early in the morning until Sarah comes out and starts telling Sam off about messing with the water pump. And of course, Bucky flirtatiously says, hi, Sarah. Maybe a Wilson Barnes hookup is in the future. Who knows? And then, you know, this is where it's ironic that is where Sam and Bucky start to really bond because, you know, they start giving it to each other like the little dings that friends do, just joking around with each other. And then Sam starts to train with the shield. And, you know, him and Bucky are having this conversation while they're throwing the shield back and forth. And actually, side note, in Captain America Civil War, there was a deleted scene of Falcon, Bucky, and Cap all passing the shield around. And maybe we'll get something like that in the next episode. I really, really like that. Sam says it feels weird picking it up again and that the legacy of the shield is complicated, to say the least. You know, Bucky apologizes. He admits that neither him nor Steve could have had any idea what it felt like for a black man to be handed the shield. And he's right. And, you know, with that apology, he hands the shield to Sam and almost officially, like, yes, you're Captain America. And for the record, if he doesn't believe that, I'm sure what he opens in that case and sees at the end of the episode will solidify the fact that he does consider him to be Captain America. Sam again says that Steve is gone, not dead. So I feel like that they're leaving the door open for another later appearance by Steve Rogers. You know, Bucky, we was talking about the shield and how basically that shield was the closest thing he had to a family now. And that's why when Sam gave up the shield, he started to question everything. Sam, Steve, even himself. And that was a major reason for the way he acted earlier in the season. And, you know, Sam thanks him and gives him some tough love. He tells him you got to stop looking to other people to tell you who you are. He asks Bucky if he's still having the nightmares. And this time, Bucky's actually honest and says with a smile, yes, all the time. He says that means he remembers a part of so that means a part of him is still there, which means there's part of the Winter Soldier still left inside him. Sam says the exact thing that Bucky needed to hear. He tells him that all the amends he did weren't actually amends. They were avenging, stopping all the wrongdoers he enabled as the Winter Soldier. He's like, you think apologizing to them is going to bring you closure, and it didn't. And he's like, think about it. Tell me, in that book, there's at least one person that that you can bring closure to, and only you can bring closure to. And he says, there's at least one. And Bucky responds, obviously, there's about a dozen. And you know, Sam says, start at one. We all know who that is. That's Yorin Nakajima, the old guy from the earlier episodes, you know, that Bucky killed his son while he was working as the Winter Soldier. You know, look at this. Sam is a better therapist than Bucky's therapist. I mean, we get this dialogue about how they're not, you know, a team. They're just coworkers. And I like that in the trailer, it ended with Sam saying, yeah, but we look good. And I think that's going to be the next episode when Sam is in his the Wakandan suit. And he's standing next to Bucky. I'm hoping it's like after, like, or like either right before like a big battle or like after it. Like when they're standing there after the debris and just like, man, we messed a lot of stuff up. Yeah, but we look good, though. I think that'd be really nice to see. You cut back to Sam and his sister by the boat, and Sam's about to paint over the name, and she says, stop, we can't do it. They agree that they're not going to sell the boat, and Sam talks about not being able to win every fight, and he's okay with that. But this is a fight that he can't lose because it's the fight to keep his family's legacy and the history intact. And, you know, after what Bradley said, even more so, that's ingrained in him as something he has to do. Then, you know, after this heart-to-heart with his sister, he's now has, like, this motivation to take up the mantle as Captain America, even more so than he did, to make all the pain and suffering, not only for him, but by extension, him and all of the black people moving forward, to be able to see themselves in Captain America. And then we have this Rocky training montage with Sam training with the shield. I really, really, really liked that it showed him having to train. Like, he wasn't able just to pick up the shield and just be able to throw it and bounce it off perfectly and do backflips and somersaults and everything. he had to put in a ton of work. And we're not, you know, how long he actually did this for is really unclear at this point. But by the end of the montage, he was looking really fluid and strong. And I can't wait to see him in the next episode using that shield. I hope it's, I hope when they show him in his new suit, and it's comic book accurate, or at least close to the uniform. Because, I mean, when Sam took up the mantle of Captain America, it was only a few years ago. So it was a very modernized suit. So I could definitely see them almost doing it exactly as it was in the comics. And that is just going to be something truly awesome to see. Speaking of that, I was saying this earlier, Sam taking up the mantle, there's this nice moment where his nephew is like, running his hands, fingers over the shield and looking up at him and has this like proud, like honored face. And it's like, wow, this is a black Captain America. This is awesome. And that's, and then we go moving forward. We have Carly linking up with Batroc. So Sharon is obviously not working with the Power Broker because unless it's a double cross where he can take her out, maybe. I mean, but I don't see her working with the Power Broker. Torres calls and lets him know about a hit in New York for the Flag Smashers. And Sam just happens to be watching TV at the time and sees all the stories about the GRC vote. She enacts her plan to take over the GRC to stop the vote. The scene was very reminiscent of the Black Widow Red Room scenes from the trailer. So obviously, Sam and Bucky will go to New York to stop them. Sam finally opens up the case and we're not shown what it is. And believe me, I've tried to look in the mirror behind him. I've tried to look in the reflection of his eyes. I've done everything I could possibly think of trying to see what's in that case. And obviously I couldn't, but he does have like this exhale of like understanding the weight of what's about to do. Like almost the fact that this suit in front of him, it's obviously a Cap Wakandan vibranium suit. It hits him that, yeah, I'm about to be Captain America. And the episode ends. Now, there was a post-credit scene. We see Walker doing his best Iron Man impression and making a new shield, welding his Medals of Honor to the shield, setting up the appearance, or at least a future appearance, for him as U.S. agent. I have a feeling that he's going to just show up and be like, I'm back. Like the classic cover when he came back after losing the title of Captain America and returning as U.S. agent. So it appears that the Disney Plus shows will have the last two episodes, the only ones with post-credit scenes. WandaVision, the second to last episode, had one post-credit scene. And then the second one, the final episode, had two in a post and mid-credit scene. Mid and post, so that backwards. I have a feeling that we'll get the same thing for Falcon the Winter Soldier next week. Theory time. So if anything I say actually comes to fruition, it could spoil your shock and awe over what happens in the next episode, if it's what I think it is. So if you want to back out now and, you know, not listen to my theories, just in case I'm right, no hard feelings, but I'm going to move into my theories now. So I feel like I said earlier that there's going to be like a Dark Reign or Secret Empires adaptation. You know, Dark Reign and Secret Empires, you had these villains basically filling in as the good guys. Like in Secret Empires, if you don't know, it was revealed that Cap was actually working for Hydra the whole time. And then it was long, complicated reasoning why it wasn't really Cap, but I digress. So I can see something like that with John Walker. You know, he thinks that he's working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's actually Hydra. And then once he sees what he's capable of with Hydra, he buys in and becomes like the dark Captain America. Or that, you know, this could even set up almost like a Civil War II that would likely center around Wanda again as the catalyst, you know, because she was the one who did everything in Sokovia, Lagos, where he killed all the Wakandan people. And then you got, again, in Civil War, she, you know, did a lot of damage and was a fugitive. And then you got her events in WandaVision. So it could lead to another registration, and you know, it can fall like an actual registration versus just the Avengers. Because by that time, there's going to be a lot more heroes available and things like that that they could use, like they'll probably be the X-Men, Fantastic Four, and things like that. They could do a true Civil War event with a whole bunch of characters like they did in the comics. I'll have to admit that I haven't read the Civil War 2 stories yet, because I was worried it was going to like affect my feelings on the first one, which is, as most of you will know, one of my favorite all-time comic book runs ever. I'm sure I'll cave soon rather than later, especially with all these pieces falling into place. I might want to bone up on that before I miss out on what's going to happen. And now here's my big earth-shattering theory. And I've been saying it this whole time. I feel like General Ross is the power broker. I feel like when the blip happened, he didn't blip, and he used his connections in the government to get everything he needed to become a super warlord in Madripoor. And now that he has a taste of all this power, I don't think he wants to give it up. And I think he was about to create an army of super soldiers so he could enact his will. And that's something that his goal was until Carly messed it up. Now, I would like to see, like, the post-credit scene would be, like, similar to the post-credit scene of the Edward Norton Incredible Hulk movie, which, again, I'll say is canon, by the way. Even though it's a different actor, it was referenced in multiple movies. Mark Ruffalo in Avengers even said, "I last time I was in New York, I broke Harlem," which is, like I said on the show before, exactly what happened in the Hulk movie. But if you don't know, you know, that the post-credit scene of that was, you know, he got Bruce Banner meditating, and then he just opens his eyes, and they're green, showing that he can control the power now. I feel like there'll be a reverse. It'll be a similar mirror to that with General Ross. And he may not be, you know, meditating, but he may have just been like, everything we've done has failed. I'm going to step this up. And he, you know, gives himself a shot and everything. It's just all of a sudden it just, he opens his eyes and they're red and cut to black. That would be so cool. Because, you know, they said that one of that someone they wanted to use who's a very grounded character. Wait a minute. I just thought about that. So all that's a very grounded character. Why would she want to be with Thor? Huh. I'm gonna have to look into that, because that's based off what the head writer and the producer said, that the secret cameo was someone who was incredibly grounded and wanted to see this person next to Thor. Huh. More on that moving forward, because I honestly just thought of that in real time right now. But that's, so those are my theories. Falcon and the Winter Soldier has been a true treat. Again, we have fantastic displays of cinematography and acting, directing, writing. These two Marvel shows have been, in my opinion, cinematically and from like a production standpoint and quality of quality of film and entertainment, based off of what the majority of, you know, the critics and the, you know, the scholars of film dictate as good entertainment and good film. You know, great story, dynamic characters, great cinematography, the soundtrack, everything, it all plays into it. And both WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier have been fantastic. And then we have Loki right around the corner. So I'm really excited moving forward for the MCU. Then we got, right after Loki, we got Black Widow. So it's nice. It's really nice to have the Marvel Universe back again. COVID-19 really did a number on Marvel. And everyone, really. But I think we should have seen all this stuff. We should be moving into the next round of movies already. And if COVID didn't happen, we might have been already seen Spider-Man. Venom 2, Morbius. Whew. There's a lot of stuff we missed. But we're going to eventually get them. But that's my spiel. Again, I just want to thank everyone for stopping by. I really do appreciate every single listener. If you like what you hear, go ahead and like, subscribe, share, tweet, Facebook, whatever you do. Just share it around if you like the content. We got some big things working behind the scenes. There might be a surprise episode coming up in the next few days. Maybe. We'll see. Like I said, one of these days I'm going to get my act together and do a breakdown of Invincible. You know what I might do is I might wait for the whole series to come out and do like a series breakdown. I don't think anyone's ever done a full series breakdown. You're going to have to get some snacks and a lot of fluids for that one because it's going to be a long show. But again, thank you so much for listening. And just I want to remind everyone, I don't know if anyone knows this, but there's an Easter egg in my one of the episodes, previous episodes of my show. So if you go through and listen to all of the content, think of it as the Marvel Universe. When the credits roll, you stay for a little bit. Just saying. Nice little hint. Again, thank you so much. Until next time, this is Nerdpool Prime, signing off.